Welcome to Through the Web podcast with me, the co-host Tausif.
And me, Dagogo.
And it's been a few good weeks since we've seen each other, Dagogo, because we were off last week.
Yes, Easter.
Easter. Do you have a good time off?
I did. Spent time with family, which was good. Just ate a lot. And yeah, that's about it, really.
Yeah, I can't say the same about myself because I was just completely knocked out with sickness.
Oh, really?
Yes. Don't get worried. It's not COVID. But I had all the symptoms of COVID. And the whole family, we thought we had COVID because all of us shared similar symptoms. And one of the nights, I was just completely down. Like, it was just fever. And I was just, like, having literally fever dreams. It wasn't fun. So we did the PCR the day after. And luckily, it's not COVID. Still bypassing it again, touch wood.
Glad to see you're feeling better though, man.
Yeah, with a voice that I can hopefully carry on without making it too difficult for Britain to edit. I hope I don't cough every 2 seconds.
Yeah, okay. Well, why don't we move on to something interesting that you've watched this week?
What do you mean? Do you think my COVID story or close enough COVID story is interesting? Well, for me, actually, I didn't get much time to watch anything. I was just recovering.
Okay.
The only thing I watched was like Moon Knight, and that was about it. That's the latest Marvel thing. So the weekly episodes came out, watched it. That's about it. Tried getting better, but I'm sure you watched something over the week.
Just a couple of things. Two things that stand out to mind. They're kind of random, but one was on like the Australian recession in 1990.
Wow.
So there was a little documentary that was made in 1993 about what happened with that. And essentially it's interesting because it has some parallels to today, essentially. So it was interesting because they had like the prime minister at the time who was interviewed, also like the not the Fed, but the Reserve Bank of Australia, our central bank, his the head of that at the time was interviewed and all these other people. And they're kind of saying that they made the mistake of like leaving that boom to go too long in the 80s. And essentially they had like really low interest rates. And they're saying towards the end of 1989, they kept it too low for too long for 9 months. And they're like, that was a horrible mistake that caused this big downturn. And in my mind, I was like, 9 months? We've had zero for like, well, yeah, like since 2008. So it's like, I don't know. But yeah, it was a very interesting episode and just like what that caused and how they came out of it and everything. And I thought it was like a good retrospective. I'd never actually looked into that. So, yeah.
What was the other one?
The other one was on the Sri Lankan crisis that's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy at the moment. So it was an Indian outlet that I actually watched a little documentary on, but I don't know if that's biased or not. I'm not sure their relationship. But essentially they're kind of just saying that it was a lot of government policy failures and too much – you know, borrowing of money and not enough production and some other stuff to do with like farm production. There were some laws that were put into place that banned, I think it was some kinds of pesticides because of, for some reason, and it, you know, reduced the output by 50%. It was just a whole bunch of things that went wrong. And now the countries are in a lot of debt, looking to default and begging for money from the IMF and other places. And it's a pretty sad situation there. So, I hope, you know, they get the money they need and get out of that.
Yeah, I've been following briefly as well, and things took quite a violent turn with a few protests going around there as well. People obviously joke about everything, but I remember seeing a tweet asking Elon Musk to buy off Sri Lankan debt or something of that sort. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, in the video, they said that the entire value of Sri Lanka was less than, about the same as like Kylie Jenner. So it was
It is crazy how we value things in a lot of ways. But how would that even work? Like, say if Elon Musk decides to do, okay, like I'll pay off the debt of a certain country, I'm sure he can for a lot of countries.
I guess they have to pay him back with interest, just like the IMF. Yeah. But it's, I don't know what the international laws are about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going back to like the Gilded Age or something. That's it's an interesting concept, but as for how that works, I have no idea.
The way things are going, we aren't too far from seeing stuff like that happening. Like that completely shatters our concept of what the economy is, what society is. So yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised. Like 5 years from now, Elon Musk buys, I don't know, Tunisia or something.
Just turns into a big Tesla factory.
That's it. So any favorite comment of the
week? So this was on the last one, episode 7. So this is from Daniel De Silvia Productions. He says, great quality podcast, guys. I'm sure that in the near future, you guys are going to be pulling many numbers. Keep it up. So just thanks for the encouragement, mate. That's good.
Cheers. Thanks for that. My one was from That Was Theory from the same episode. It says, I think a pixel would taste like you're sitting too close to a TV in the 90s. Straight up static. This is based on the story we shared about Coca-Cola coming up with a new limited edition beverage that's supposed to taste like pixels. Mm-hmm. And we said we don't know how it tastes like, and we had our different perceptions. So it's actually dropping next week. So I'm keeping tabs on it. Hopefully we can get our hands. Hopefully we'll get our hands on it. And maybe get Braden on top of things.
He's got his monster drink there.
He's got a monster in there. But other than that, what new videos have you been working on?
Okay. So the one that's coming out today, later today, will be on DALL-E 2, which is a AI system by OpenAI, which can turn text into images. Even though that's been seen before for like the past 5 years, this is definitely another level. Yeah. So like when you look at some of the stuff, I think maybe Braden, you can put one on screen. It looks like a photo.
Yeah.
Like some of these renderings look like a photo, and it's just like people are still trying to grapple what this means. Like artists on Twitter are kind of a bit unnerved, and I don't blame them because literally, if you're I gave the example of in the video of there's this picture of a cat with it holding a piece of cheese in like an emperor outfit, and it looks like a poster. It looks like an advertisement. So I was like, you know, if you were the CEO or the manager of this company, and like, hey, I need an ad, instead of like paying an artist to go and concept this and sketch it up and do all this stuff, you just literally type in the sentence and there it is. It's like, and it's, you know, it's to the point where it's like 80 to 90% there. It'll just need some brushing up, and then you can just use that as your ad.
Yeah. So, cause the quality of it is like amazing. I've seen some of the tweets as well. I think then it came out a couple of weeks ago, when it blew up on the news cycle, but I saw some of the images and it's fantastic. It's how, and I think they provide different versions of it as well.
Yeah.
It's not just the one image. They'll provide like 10 different variations of the same. And you can choose, and all of them look like, it's not like it's just a slight little difference between each image. Mm. Like each image is thought of by different artists.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of dove into this a bit in the video, and it's like, you know, what makes this so good, like aesthetically pleasing? Like if you look at the color science and everything looks right. Yeah. So it turns out they have another extra layer of training that essentially mimics what humans would find aesthetically pleasing, and they put that into the training system. So it's essentially like, okay, so this is what humans will like. So we'll kind of gear the AI to produce stuff like this, essentially. So it kind of gives this impression of everything that comes out will be like aesthetically pleasing because it's like baked into the system. So it's the difference between that and a lot of other ones, because I kind of compared it like this one to last year's state of the art. And it's like there's this one image of a city on Mars, and this one, like the DALL-E comes out, it's all beautiful and everything. And the AI next to it looks like squished blobs. Like, you know, because they all looked kind of the same, like AI generated pictures. You could instantly look at it and be
exactly.
Like, yeah. And it was like, it's almost something there, but it's all foggy and muddy. But this is like, it's well thought out, well planned. And yeah, it's just interesting that this is the very baby infant steps. Like next year it'll be twice as good. And then the year after four times as good. And then before you know it, there's going to be animations. And it's just, it's another world, really. This was a step change, I think.
Yeah, and if you're listening to our podcast exclusively via audio, do check the DALL-E, DALL-E 2, is it?
DALL-E 2,
DALL-E 2 stuff online, or just simply check our YouTube channel. We'll have the images.
Or you can check out the video in Cold Fusion.
Or that. Sorry, not or, and that. So you have to do all three. We'll look at them individually. Check our video on the podcast and check Cold Fusion's video. And then come back and make a comment, and hopefully we'll pick that as the next comment. But jokes aside, I think the amount of I think just opens up so many new like questions as well, or just the concept of what art is or what we consider as content in the internet lingo. Like if it's all done that, you know, easily, like what is, you know, what differentiates from the work done to create something valuable versus something especially when the output is almost as equally good. Mm-hmm. Right. One thing, for example, like, you know, I think of is, say you like tell me a band that you love listening to.
Let's say American football.
Okay, so have you seen them live ever?
No.
Okay, so for all you know, they could be this, you know, elaborate AI trained digital hoax, mm-hmm. right? That's like you have no idea if they exist in real life. Uh-huh. You know, like we could pose that hypothetical question, yeah. right? And then you find out that they actually don't exist. It's all uh-huh. this corporate, you know, like this big corporation decided to put up AI images, AI videos, everything's uh-huh. digital, nobody uh-huh. exists. Uh-huh. How does that change your relationship to the art that they've been putting out? Do you then feel distant? Because how does that piece of information then make you feel about the songs that you've been listening to from
yeah,
them?
I think... in this particular hypothetical situation, it completely changes everything because it's no longer like it's a human soul to another human soul, like what they've written, you know, the guitar pieces they come up with, some of the lyrics, you know, you can kind of relate to that or understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. That's just like severed if it's an AI. It's like this metal thing that you don't understand that, mm-hmm. you know, it may produce good art. It sounds good, but it's not the same connection that you would have before. But that's just me, and maybe some other people might disagree yeah. and say, hey, like...
But that's super good. Interesting, isn't yeah. it? Like just that one piece of information, yeah. you're completely disassociating yourself from all the art
would,
that
would you say it's the same
for you? I would say it's very similar. Yeah. And I'm quite conflicted. Like I haven't given it enough thought. But mm-hmm. To add another layer to that question, what if from here on there are bands who are open up or corporations who come up with art that's using certain... you know, algorithm to create art and content for you, would you be open to listening to them and would you connect to them? Or is it the fact that it's not produced by human?
No. Okay. That's different. Okay. I think that would be fine because I understand it's like, you know, a contractual agreement. I understand what I'm getting into. But
sure.
if I was to be shockingly found out that it was like, you know, not a human, then that's different. So I think, yeah, I think that's fair. Like if it's yeah. an AI producing this and I know that, it's just cool. It's like, oh, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. this is like just music, you know?
Yeah, so. It's also another angle there that I drew parallel to was there's this photo shoot. I forgot the brand. It was a makeup brand as far as I remember. I think it was Estee Lauder. They did a photo shoot in space, right? It was just basically the products. I think they took it to, again, I got to fact check the details, but it was either near the ISS or using the ISS or something of that sort, International Space Station. And then they basically did like this whole elaborate photo shoot of just the product, you know, up in the air with zero gravity, all that kind of stuff. But when you look at the images, anybody can Photoshop it, right? Mm-hmm. So the output actually matters less in a lot of ways. But
then the concept behind
the concept and the process, right?
Yeah.
So I think the fact that you can come up with such great, beautiful images just by writing a piece of text would be very useful, but I think the application of it would I guess carry the weight of the final product. I think that's where I'm thinking about this crazy tech.
I guess yes and no, but it's like, what is the purpose of the art? Like
exactly
if
the
it's
purpose.
If it's for a cultural significant, you know, imagining of something, maybe, but then if it's for like a corporate, you know, logo or something else, like this is it's going to put a lot of people out of work and it's going to change like, you know, the whole AI / you know, automation unemployment situation. This is like, you know, the arts was the last place that people expected to last and hold out. But I really feel like, you know, things have changed now. Like there's some things I saw and some things I put in the video that it's like I couldn't tell that it was an AI generated image. If I'm being honest, there's only like one that was like perfect.
Right.
And you know, if it can do that now, like it's like, this is a step change. Like from here on out, it's going to be different.
So. Yeah. Cause you look at the idea of Photoshop. Previously, when you needed to manipulate an image, you'd have to print them. You have to like take scalpels and draw out every part of the human, you know, silhouette, and then put it on another and then take a photo of that. So that's how, you know, other creatives back in the days used to do these things. Now there's this magic wand on Photoshop. You just click on it and it selects everything in the back. So everything, like the whole point of technology is reducing friction, reducing as much as, you know, menial work that you do around creativity as well. So it's gotten to a point.
But this is no longer menial work. No. This is like the literal creative process.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's like literally like you have an artist who says, I want to create, you know, a rocket blasting off on a cheese moon. And it's like, okay, I'll sketch this out. I'll do this. So they had the idea. They do all the process, how it's going to look, the lighting, the colors and everything, and then they get the output. But that whole middle section of all that creativeness is just gone.
Yeah.
Like it's a step change, I think.
Yeah, it's. I think it goes through a lot of philosophical questions, but yeah, definitely. I can't wait to see
it's,
where
it's interesting. Then,
I love where it's taking us. But I feel like you mentioned, I think people still crave that human connection and the human stories and the processes.
So just one thing, like, you know, I honestly feel for the artists and the people who make a living for this, but on the other hand, I'm kind of like, this is so cool for just someone who wants to muck around and just make whatever they want. This is like absolutely the greatest tool. So,
it's amazing. Have you had access to it?
Yeah. I haven't even clicked on the sign up thing because I'm like, I'm not going to. Because it's like the waiting list is so long. It's
I still put my email address in. But yeah, so for those who don't know, you can't just get it right now. I think you have to wait on a waiting list where they open it up for you. But I think they've approached a few influencers and like influencer creators.
So there's Karen Chung. I showed a bit of her video and like how she did it. It was like, you know, it just took 10 seconds. Yeah. And then, it was just, it's so good. But I think you guys should watch that video. So just going to plug that one.
Watch on the Cold Fusion channel. Moving on to one of the interesting stories of the week as well. CNN Plus. Streaming service down to the ground.
One of the most successful streaming services ever.
Ever in messing it up.
in the opposite way. This was amazing. So CNN, one of the world's biggest broadcasters from the United States, they decided to launch a platform called CNN Plus for streaming only. And, you know, it was only up for less than a month, so 3 weeks, and then they had to cancel it because only 10,000 people signed up, which is pretty sad. That's so, like, it reminds you of Quibi, you know that.
Yeah, exactly. Quibi was. We should do an episode on Quibi on top. CNN Plus. So what would they be like? So help me understand. What was the premise of the streaming service? Like, would they be just showing, you know, like repeat of existing news, or is it like original shows?
Okay, yeah. So there was some inventory of original programming. I think some talk shows, Anderson Cooper. So I think it was just some original shows that they were going to be streaming just on CNN Plus.
Right.
But obviously it wasn't enough to draw a crowd. They were asking for $6 a month or $60 a year. Okay. And I think that they had a price reduction in the first week.
Right.
That's how bad it was. And then literally they have to lay off staff now because they put so much money into this. And it was an absolute disaster. And I don't know why they did this because according to Forbes, in February of this year, CNN's rating, this is the headline, CNN's ratings collapsed, prime time down nearly 70% in key demo. So 70% drop. And after that, they went and did this.
Incredible. So it's like, 70% drop. It's not a joke.
Yeah. It's like, that's almost like dead. Like,
yeah.
So,
or maybe it's a reaction to it. Maybe they thought it was a good idea to see, okay, like, quote unquote digital, you know, like, let's get into that market.
is that really, read the room? Like, I think it's probably because the world just saw the American political, that was 2020. Two, so that's this year. I'm actually not sure because I was gonna say once the election ended, then everyone would stop watching. But this is this year, so I'm actually not sure why that happened. They had a massive collapse, and then they decide to launch this and it really just didn't work out.
It's backfired. It's not the first time either because, again, like Casey Neistat used to have this
Beam.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, he's a creator on YouTube and he had his own social media platform, which turned into a pseudo young digital news network.
He had something to do with CNN.
Yeah. So what happened was, that Beam platform became like this. The idea of the way it was pitched was this news, like news source from the digital youth, right? It was very muddy, very vague, but obviously had the backing of Casey because he was quite influential at the time within YouTube. And then CNN bought that out, like acquired the entire company for $26 million, only for it to be run down to the ground after a couple of months. Which again, like, why did they buy it? And well, the why was that they wanted to get into the younger demographic. And obviously, you know, using Casey's influence with the younger demographic would have helped. But I don't know how they paid $26 million for something that still wasn't development and that wasn't solid. And then they bought it and nobody heard about it ever again. So I don't know who's taking these decisions. And it's only like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, so they got a track record with this stuff. I'm just trying to find out the amount that they spent on CNN Plus because I think it was something like a few hundred million.
You'd have to be.
That they sunk into this. It's just, I don't know, it's poor management decisions, but also like, you know, just kind of sourcing the market. Obviously, it's easy for us to sit here and criticize, but still, like, if you're in the industry, you should kind of know these things.
10,000 signups is I don't know how you get that low for legacy, like, brand.
Yeah, it's like this is one of the, or if not the biggest name in like legacy news. It's hard to wrap your head around.
We were both like quite literally speechless. Like, still, because you know, I don't know.
agreed.
On the topic of streaming services, this week Netflix has seen some red, especially on their stock prices. So after years of growth, Netflix reported on Tuesday that it had lost subscribers for the first time in more than a decade. The announcement spooked Wall Street and shares plummeting more than 35%, erasing more than $50 billion in market cap from a company whose stock was already down more than 40% on the year. To explain the downturn, Netflix said that it was everything from the war in Ukraine to people sharing passwords. It also plans on cracking down on the password sharing, estimating that more than 100 million non-paying households watch the service this way. It's funny because we've covered the whole idea of streaming services just being overwhelming for so many people. Just, I think, the episode before this, the last one. And we're also talking about how the cracking down on passwords was announced a few weeks ago as well. And everything kind of pointed down towards this. And of course, we mentioned it of how they took out Netflix from Russia. So it kind of makes sense that they're saying that. But at the same time, first time, like, the blockbuster killer is seeing read themselves. What would you make of the whole scenario?
Well, there's a few things. I think if you want to take a look at markets in general, I think now is like a red time for a lot of growth stocks anyway. So, like, you know, if you look at everything from Apple to Google to Facebook, obviously Meta and all of that, they're all kind of seeing interest rates are rising. So, like, those high risk growth stocks and all that, it's kind of risk off now. So people are like, okay, so let's go like a bit safer. So that's the backdrop. But I think this is on top of that. So that's kind of, you know, I think them increasing prices as well recently, that didn't help because people were like, oh, it's another increase. It's like, you know, I've got so many other shows to pay for. Like, I don't need this because Netflix is the first one everyone had.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's the first to get rid of. But, you know, like, are they going to grow forever? I think this would have been expected. And I think the market has just overreacted to it, in my opinion. That's just me.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, they've been around for a while, right? Like, they were launched in found in 1997, actually. I didn't know they were around for this long. I thought
the DVD days.
And they used to like deliver DVDs to people's doors. I didn't know that until very recently. So I was quite surprised to find that out. And the fact that they kind of built on top of that. And I remember Blockbuster also
almost bought them. They laughed them out of the room. But exactly. They had the opportunity.
Yeah, it was like $50 million offered at that time as well, around that late 90s. So it's a huge amount. But the fact that they went on to build into this mammoth of a streaming service, you know, as I say, you know, the at one point you have to kind of think differently, do differently. But I don't think Netflix has done that for a while. Their biggest pull were those, you know, big original shows like Black Mirror and House of Cards and all those like big number one. I can't think of a big number one show that people are dying to watch on Netflix anymore. It's just
like right now. Well, Squid Game was probably the last.
Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah, but not since then. I haven't really heard.
Yeah. Well, it's like Stranger Things are coming back.
They're coming. Oh, I'm actually looking forward to that. Yeah.
So little things like that are there, but when you look at the grand scheme of things, there just isn't enough pull, especially with so many different streaming services out there.
And it's not just that. I think within Netflix, there's an issue as well. Like, there's a lot of content on there, but some of it is so bad.
It's really bad.
It's like, you know, if you had less content but higher quality, I'm sure like more people would stay. But it's like. Yeah. There could be good stuff in there, but it's in the sea and it's like hard to discover and find. So it's like, I'm out of here, you know, like if you can't find it, you're not going to really, you know.
Yeah. I mean, for example, the reason why YouTube's so successful is because it has created those ecosystems, like smaller ecosystems within, like, so you've got like different niches and different bubbles, but Netflix can't replicate that because the different, there isn't just enough pool of content to build an ecosystem of dedicated watchers for that specific thing only and pay money on top of that, right? So I think that's where Netflix is probably gonna struggle going forward. But how do you see a solution for them? Like if you were, I don't know, CEO of Netflix, how do you
There's two ways. Like you could either spend a whole bunch of money and just get some high tier shows to kind of draw people back, some really big name stuff, or like use that money to create like epic content, like original content. Or you could go the other route where it's like you have this select premium group of, I guess, homegrown creators on Netflix where it's like it's not quite the Netflix style or like – because I think Netflix, they even have like guidelines for the cameras that you have to use and whatever. Yes. So it's not quite like that, but it still is entertaining and it's like, you know – like varied enough and like good enough stuff that it's like, hey, like, you know, this, you know, it belongs here, but it's different. So I guess that's the two ways I see it going, but they're both risky. So I don't know. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I think they probably need to do some sort of bundling option. I think that's like team up with another streaming service as we talked about it a couple episodes back. The other angle could be offering like year-long packages or something of this. I don't know if they do
for a discount.
Yeah, I think that might create a little bit of less churn.
But are people going to like, when they see the upfront cost, they're going to be like...
I think that's where you offer the discounted stuff. But I think, as you mentioned, they have to tie it up with more like latest content coming in. Like the reason why people are, you know, signed up on Disney Plus, for example, from Marvel is because they have got all this stuff they have announced. This is going to be here soon, right? So I think great pieces of content, that has to be number one, and then some strategic decisions are in there to make sure the members kind of stay. But other than that, it's very difficult to be a streaming service, as CNN Plus very, very, very well knows right now. You can't just, you know, have some flashy platform and just have some random advertisement and I hope that people are just going to sign up and stay because they have options.
It's like if we build it, they'll come, but maybe not. So in a way, like it's quite, I don't know, like seeing Netflix on a decline like this, it's surreal to see, but not unexpected because Netflix has always just been the king for so long. It's like it is was this platform, and then like when the streaming wars first started happening, it was kind of like, oh, what's this? Like, you know, none of these are going to like really challenge Netflix that much. But then, it looks like it's really, you know, taken off. Like the other ones have.
Well, I think you're right in saying, I think it is a bit of overreaction in terms of people just, you know, piecing out on Netflix so soon. So I think they'll have some comeback plans, but I didn't really like the idea of them just publicly announcing that, oh, we're going to crack down on password sharing. And I think it just makes you feel disassociated, like almost blaming the customer straight away. Yeah. You know,
it's interesting because some people on Twitter were posting like old Netflix tweets from like 2013 or something, and they're like saying like, "Oh, sharing is caring," and
I think they used it to their almost like that cult, you know, like that cult following at the time. Mm. They used it to their advantage, like, you know, okay, like we know that people do it, so we'll use it as a way of marketing, which, you know, like the whole idea of Netflix and chill, they banked on that as well. So I think going forward, that whole idea of I understand they have to crack down on password sharing, but just announcing it in a way just makes your viewers feel like the enemy.
Yeah.
I know it's wrong, but at the same time, it's like you were open to it. Now you're kind of cracking down and your shares are going down. Yeah, it's like, it just feels very, you know, like me versus you kind of thing.
Yeah, confrontational. Yeah.
I
get that. I get that.
Yeah. So I think they'll have to do some really cool stuff over the next 6 months to a year to really hold on to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what they do. I don't think they'll be down and out, but it's going to be an uphill battle. And I was just going to say, like, didn't Elon Musk say something about
I was just going to get there.
Yeah.
It's, of course, when you see a bit of fire, you have Elon Musk to put gasoline over it as he just lurking around on the Twitter webs, just waiting to pounce on any news possible. So he did tweet about the Netflix news, and he just said, replied to the news saying, "The woke mind virus is making Netflix unwatchable." So very, again, political kind of angle. Inflammatory. It'll be polarizing. I'm sure there's going to be 50% of people who'd be, and I think it's literally on the dot, 50% of people will be like, "Yep, awesome, exactly, you're right, I hate Netflix because it's all woke stuff everywhere." And then you've got the 50% is like, "Whoa, this is why I've got on Netflix, because I was underrepresented all my life and I get to see myself on stuff." And so
I guess we need definitions of what
woke is.
Woke, yeah, actually means.
True.
That's the problem, I think, with a lot of things these days.
Everything.
Because, woke's changed a lot. Because I remember maybe in 2004, 2005, woke used to mean like awake, like kind of like you're –
quite literally awake.
No, but
eyes open.
But it's like, you know, the Edward Snowden revelations and all that kind of stuff. It used to like literally on the internet 2004 and stuff, that's all woke meant. Like there was nothing else. But then, you know, in 2015, 16, it completely changed to this meaning. But then even within that, what does this woke mean now? Is it, you know, the fact that gender and race like are represented, or is it virtue signaling? What does it
pandering,
mean?
Yeah.
So I guess that's the first issue.
So true. So true. I think even as I was saying that, oh, the other 50% is like, I'm kind of, you know, putting everything under one bracket. Mm. And you're right, because maybe what Elon Musk means about the woke mind virus is completely different to what I was putting under bracket, to what people understand, to what people think, right? Mm. I think as with many things, it is going to be polarizing. It is political. I think there's some truth to it, because there's some truth to the tweet, in the sense that there are people who genuinely dislike certain types of wokeness being displayed on Netflix or on popular culture. There are people who completely dislike the Oscars and Grammys because they're trying to, you know, quote unquote, shove wokeness down their throats. So I think there are people who kind of then now stay away from that kind of stuff, because I don't need that in my life.
Yeah. I think for me, like, what woke means is like the Ghostbusters movie, like not the most recent one, but the one before that, where it was like that it was a complete departure from what the Ghostbusters franchise was. And like, it just had all of these, I don't know, it's almost like political comedy where it's like, it's not funny because it's like you just preaching like things, and it's like, it's not, I don't know, it's not entertaining, it's not funny, it's just like, you know, you want to kind of just switch off and watch something, but it's like there's like some lecture given to you during it and you don't, yeah, it, you know.
Yeah, I think there's this overcorrection that's happening, right? I think it is true that, you know, a lot of the things were not represented on popular culture over the years.
But you can do that very tastefully.
Naturally and organically, yeah. I agree. As I mentioned, I think it's that overcorrection. It's like, oh, because it hasn't been done, I'm going to do it so much that now you have to listen to what I say kind of thing, rather than, oh, look, let's kind of, you know. And now some people might think, you know, provoking is the idea, is that, oh, you like getting people to talk about it by being annoyed is the idea. That way the message will go across it. But I don't know if that helps.
If you have something, why would you have a negative, you know, emotion attached to it?
Especially for something you want people to believe in, like, you know, on the same agenda or the same idea that you believe in, right? You want to do it in a way that is welcoming. But again, it's all very generalized, because there's certain groups who had to fight for their rights to be even in the conversation. And there's certain groups who, you know, that's completely different. So yeah, it'll take a political turn.
Yeah.
But I on the tweet itself, I understand what he means.
Yeah.
Whether you agree on it, disagree is a different topic.
I can't remember, but is this the tweet where he posted the expecting little? Okay, there's a Netflix series called Expecting where it's like a pregnant man. Was that the thing that he?
No.
I'm just seeing something else. All right. Well, everyone's kind of like polarized over that as well. So like, I think that's releasing in the next couple of days and people are like going nuts. So.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, again, Netflix isn't, you know, I mean, they are prone to these controversies. Like, I think there was this thing about, I forgot the name of the show, but about child dancers.
Oh, Cuties.
Cuties or something.
I think Netflix is getting sued.
On that? Yeah, I didn't follow like, the stories. Do you know what it were?
I saw people talking about it on Twitter and I was like, what are they doing? This is like the worst idea ever. But yeah,
do you want to just chime in on what it was about?
I'm pretty sure it was, I can't remember what country it was based on. It was French or something.
Probably French.
Some foreign country, but it was, I mean, it was supposed to be like some, I think it was, the intention was wholesome kids, you know, getting into something, but it was hypersexualized. Very graphic imagery for kids that age, and that kind of very, very quickly became a polarizing topic.
Yeah, it was the worst idea ever, I think. So like, I think they're getting sued like for that, and it was just like, why would you? I don't know.
Take even that risk, right?
Yeah.
But again, like, I think it's some boardrooms thing that, okay, like that risk is not talking about that the specific. Cuties one, because I have no idea about that, but in general, I think that the idea of them, they think that if I can provoke that incites conversation, and that will bring me to the table.
So it's kind of like any publicity is good publicity.
That's what some of them think. I'm sure because there's no other. I can't find any other logical sense. Like, because who is it for? Like, when you create a piece of content, right? Like, you have to think, who's your audience, right? If it's your own audience, they already know about this stuff, right? Say, you know, like about representation or however you want to brand it, but they already know that this is what my ideas are. So it has to be for the other end of people who don't know about this idea, and I want to, you know, plant this seed in their head that, oh, we exist on this side.
Yeah.
So it's just acknowledgement from that angle as well.
I guess so. But it's like, as I said, like doing it cleverly, like there's so many ways you can put this into plot, like, you know, have things structured a certain way where it makes the person think without being
like feeling attacked or feeling like it's a.
Yeah. Because like once you start attacking someone, it flips them around and it's like it can make things worse, is what I feel. Like it's literally like they get their defenses up and then it's like, oh, this stuff, I've heard it before. It's like blah, blah, blah.
I mean, like the whole idea of just, you know, reminds me of Don't Look Up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even the movie itself, like it's so meta in the idea that the movie itself became a point of controversy as well because they thought that it was a very left-leaning portrayal.
I didn't even see that at all. Like,
Like, as in you didn't see it that way, or did no. you see it in the?
I didn't see it as like, you know, it was left or right. I thought it was just like
a representation
it,
of
it. Like the people arguing about left or right is the people who it was about. That's kind yeah. of what I see. It's kind of like it was just that you know, the agreements in society has broken down, and like something so obvious as a asteroid coming towards us, like yeah. all the systems are broken, so we can't figure out what to do, and like people are arguing against each other, even yeah. though the thing is clear,
yeah.
and it's like. That's what you're doing yeah. by arguing against this movie. So
yeah, well, yeah. The movie itself was quite negatively, you know, taken as well.
I don't get it. I thought people, it was great.
So there you go.
Yeah, like,
back to that old back to square one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but just staying on the topic of Elon Musk, obviously things move so fast. By the time we covered his story, so we shoot this on Fridays for those who don't know. And then we post it on Monday. So there's usually a 2-day gap in between. Generally, over the weekends, the way we planned it is over the weekends, you don't get a lot of breaking news. Mm-hmm. But again, Elon Musk, by the time we covered him, even being interested on Twitter, he had already bought shares and got 9.2% on the day. And mm-hmm. then we talked about the fact that he was not going to be on the board. By the time we posted that episode, he said he was going to be on the board, and we mentioned that on the episode. By the time we mentioned posted the episode, he said, no, I'm not going to be on the board. So I don't know what's going to happen by the time you listen to this episode, but yep. the general timeline right now is that last week on April 14th, he has offered to buy the whole company. And on April 15th, Twitter adopted the poison pill. Do you want to break down on what it is?
I'm actually not too sure, but it's something to do with like a strategic plan where it stops a hostile takeover, because actually I'm not sure
yeah,
beyond
yeah.
that. But
so that's what they did on April 15th. On the 19th, Musk retains Morgan Stanley to consider a leveraged buyout. And then on the same day, it was the news broke out that he was willing to invest up to $15 billion of his own cash and borrow against his Twitter stake to push through a deal. And then so far, he's lined up $46.5 billion in funding. That's the story as of yesterday. So
the interesting thing is the Twitter like CEO, I forget his name, he posted on Twitter.
Agarwal, I think.
Yeah. He posted on Twitter. He posted on Twitter when the news was coming through that Elon wanted to join the board, that he was like, he was happy that Elon could
be
on the board. And it's like, you know, he sees like he's a very valuable voice, like he sees a lot of faults that we have and all this kind of stuff. And then between then and the poison pill, what changed? Why have they all turned around and said we hate this guy? Like, was it internally? Because I know some Twitter employees were saying they wanted to quit because of Elon potentially taking over. So I don't know if it was an internal pressure or what, but it just seems like a complete 180 from the outset.
Anyway. Yeah, and the funny thing is, because he was actually secretly buying shares from January, from according to SEC, or was it February? But yeah, early on this year, January, yeah, he started building his stake. It was only in March, towards the end of March, when he started critiquing Twitter on Twitter. So it wasn't like, especially with shareholders, I'm sure they would have some form of intelligence that, you know, Musk is lining up some sort of bid, some sort of takeover. They need to get their information from some, unless it was on CNN Plus looking at.
And no one saw it.
No one saw it. Or maybe they were part of the 10,000 people who subbed, and by the time they wanted the updated news, gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'd be surprised. Like, why wouldn't they know about this takeover? Like, he can't be that stealthy where nobody knows that he's taking over an entire company.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they decided, oh, no, you can't be on the board. You have to be on the board. But then it's Musk again. Yeah. You just don't know what he's thinking, right?
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, I don't know, like, was there a legitimate reason, I don't know, that they don't want him, like...
I mean, he's a controversial figure. I mean, let's be honest, right? Whether or not you agree or idolize him or dislike him, he is... the number one most influential, at least in the top, you know, five, right? Influential people in the world right now. Mm. So to have someone like that kind of take over your company all of a sudden, I understand the fear, like, okay, like, what's he going to do with this, right?
True, and it's very unpredictable.
Exactly. And I think that's the perfect word, like unpredictable. Like you just don't know what's happening. Like somehow we have just accepted that he's going to buy Twitter at this point. But even a few weeks ago, we were thinking, why is he doing this? Mm. Like we still haven't answered the why. Like why is he doing this stuff? Is it just to, you know, take the idea of freedom of speech and really establish a public square where everybody can say anything? Mm. But we know that
I just got a flash of like when Elon buys Twitter that the logo changes to like a Dogecoin.
Again, it's not out of the possibilities. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The funny thing is on April 1st, I saw this news that this is the first time in a while where people can't tell the difference between what's true and what's fake on April Fool's posts. Right.
Yeah.
So
do you know what that's actually called? An interesting fact, that particular phenomenon is called Poe's Law. When you can't tell the difference between absurdity in reality or parody. Right. Like, and
wow,
it's a very internet thing, but yeah, it's called Poe's Law for everyone out there. So
I think like Elon Musk is the perfect embodiment of that law, if that makes sense. Yeah. Where if he says something, you don't know if he's joking or if he's just going to do it, right? Yeah. Like he talked about like the whole idea of Dogecoin.
Mm.
Like everybody thought he was just trolling around. Mm. And then now he went on to, you know, SNL and now he's talking about having Tesla merch that you can buy with Dogecoin. Like, what's he doing? What are you doing? Like, and he's running like three companies, four companies at this. Like, what's happening?
that 10 seconds just there was like the perfect summary of everything.
It's everyone like, said, like, what's going on?
It's like, what is he doing? What's happening? But yeah, it's true. It's like, I don't know, Elon's trajectory, it's just been amazing to watch. Like, you know,
incredible.
You know, 2015, hardly anyone knew about him. It was just this guy building Teslas and then like, became the richest man in the world and the memeing on everyone. It's like, which other richest man has been like this?
Yeah, like just before the show, Brandon was like, where does he get the time? Like he's supposed to run a company. But you know, like that's the thing with, like he uses that as his own marketing. Like it's very strategic. I don't think he just wakes up and decides to just tweet randomly like Kanye West, right?
Right, sometimes he might.
But I feel he's not an idiot.
Like, no, definitely not.
He's strategic with what he does. So, I'm sure he's got something lined up that we just don't know.
Yeah,
don't know about.
Again,
on the topic of Twitter, so I think it was early last year when NFTs were blowing up everywhere, and one of the biggest news at the time was that someone bought the very first tweet, which basically means that they bought an NFT of the first tweet for. Exclusive rights to 2006 tweet for a cool $2.9 million at the time. And then last week, he announced that he was looking to part ways with the tweet for the hefty sum of $48 million. So that's the asking price he had on last week. But there was this one problem, which was the auction, which closed on Wednesday, received just 7 bids. And the top bidder offered it a 0.09 of Ethereum, which is around $277 at current price. So that's what Coin... say it with a straight face. It's just hilarious at this point. That's what Coindesk reported anyway. And that's 170,000 times less than what he had asked for. I don't know which one's more funny this week. The CNN Plus story or this one?
This one's just sad, man, because it's just one guy. It's like it just lost all this money.
True.
But this kind of like the NFT market was just like a microcosm of bubbles, you know? Like, you know, the tulip bubble happened, the dot-com bubble happened, all of this kind of stuff. But this was just compressed to like such a blistering pace that, you know, a few months later, one of the top, you know, big stories has just collapsed into almost nothing. So I think this is where you get the trough of, in the technology cycle, the trough of disillusionment when everyone's kind of like, this stuff is crap. And then out of the ashes kind of rises the real use cases. So I think we'll kind of start seeing that maybe next year. And, you know, tokens that have utility, not overpriced, and it's kind of, they have something that's, you know, worth value. I think that's what we'll start seeing. But this is just a microcosm of the bubble popping. That's just brutal.
Yeah, it's, and like, it's just going to keep on happening, I think. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will lose money. Mm-hmm. I know we spoke about NFTs, and quite favorably as well. I think we both agree that the utility side of things of NFT still has a lot of value.
Mm.
But this story, I think, perfectly encapsulates what the big bubble of NFT bursting looks like and will look like in the coming months. I foresee more of these happening.
Yeah, what other things sold for a large amount during
the Beeple.
Oh yeah, the Beeple JPEG.
The Beeple, which is
$69 million. That one, yeah.
$69 million. It's
surprised Musk didn't buy that one.
Yeah, no.
$420.
But yeah, it's I don't know what's again going forward with those purchases. It was all a flex, I reckon. Because yeah, just the first tweet, I don't know, like what's anyone gonna do with it?
Yeah.
Right. It's the same thing about holding art. If you think that there's value, there's value. Bored Apes. Well, the Bored Ape one I think still has some utility in the sense.
Because meetups and all of that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the meetups and the networking is pretty much the only very, because you've got like celebrities who are part of the thing, and then you can get access to like, you know, certain exclusive.
Okay. That kind of group makes sense. Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I think that still works, but everything else, well, just there'll be a few, you know, like the CryptoPunks and the Bored Apes will probably kind of survive because just of the whole network effect. Everything else, if you decided to buy your cousin's, tech forward cousin's, I don't know, kitten ear.
Do you know something image? Interesting? I'm just realizing, like, if NFTs came out and started blowing up now, like, people could just use DALL-E 2 and just like come up with all this crazy cool stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just something to think about.
Yeah, maybe once we get the access.
That's,
nobody's getting access yet.
Well, for those few who would have had the access, they'll be miles ahead with this super omniscient AI artist that I could use.
Yeah, again, that blurs the whole line about NFTs and art. And yeah, I just don't see how you can utilize it anymore going forward with the stuff that people were doing. So yeah, going forward, I think NFTs will probably be solely utilitarian.
Yeah, I think so too.
On another news of the week that I picked up was this VR video game company, Somnium Space, has created a metaverse similar to those who created by Meta and others, with the goal of allowing to meet up with your dead relatives and friends. Straight out of Black Mirror. Straight out of Black Mirror. I think the episode was San Junipero.
Back. Oh, wait.
San Junipero, wasn't it? One of my favorite episodes.
Oh, the two girls. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Beautiful episode. Yeah, I loved the episode.
Yeah. That was cool.
People who entered the company's VR world and turn on the feature will have their body language, movements, speech, and other character traits recorded and stored on Somnium's servers. If said users were to die, others can log on and interact with their newly created AI representations who will emulate the deceased as best as possible. If I die, people can come in and then they can have a conversation with my avatar, with my movements, with my voice, said the founder, Arthur Sykov. Maybe for the first 10 minutes, you'd not know that it's the actual AI, and that's the goal. Note that Sykov said if and not when he dies. So I think he's working on something else.
What do they call it? Hyper something freezing?
Or just some sort of pale man. I think Jeff Bezos was also talking about extending.
Lots of billionaires have talked about that. But yeah, as for this, I think it's probably like inevitable that someone's going to try and come up with this. But is it too early is what I'm thinking? Like the metaverse is hardly established.
I mean, it doesn't have to be in the metaverse. I think the whole concept, if you can mimic a real life person's character traits into a 3D format that you can visit later, I think it can actually have, you know, it can have good use for people who want to grieve. I think people grieve in different ways. And I think this could actually be a positive thing for many, many people. A lot of people find it really hard to move on and or at least get in, you know, come in terms. But of course, you know, with any tech, especially something that can, you know, blur the lines between reality and it could psychologically impact many people who wouldn't want to leave that place, you know, because they'd be like, oh shit, you know, this is where I was happy kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know, man. It's a tough one.
Yeah, actually, as you're saying all that does raise a lot of concerns, I guess. Yeah, it's like, you know, people have been getting over the death of loved ones very painfully, but extended periods of time. And like, I guess what happens if you allow access to a part of them for a long time afterwards? Like, you know, what's that going to do? I think it will affect people in different ways, and I guess some of it will be positive, but some of it might have, you know, some trauma associated with it.
Yeah, like, you know, as I was saying as well, like psychologically, like you wouldn't want to leave that place. Mm. Like, you know, like if somebody you really loved passed away and you get their exact replica in a 3D world, like who would want to let go of that? You know, it's I think on a deep human level, it can have a lot of emotional impact, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's
that's wild, yeah. But like, I'm guessing this is just like very
early stages, yeah. But again, with like I wouldn't be surprised, you know. Like,
but the thing is, like, okay, if we're thinking about what he's saying here, the actual technology to make this happen, like, what would it take for someone to be fooled for 10 minutes that you're talking to a deceased person, like? Whatever scan you're using would have to be perfect. The facial animations would have to be great.
Yeah.
The AI replicating that voice would have to be good. Like the AI that actually structures sentences and interacts. And we have a little bit of these things, but bring them all together.
Because I think the biggest thing would still be touch, right? Because with like, say you're-
Oh, I wasn't even getting into that.
No, but see, the idea of, you know, wearing an Oculus headset.
So he's even talking about like, you're here, like, you know, you're fooled with your every sense kind of thing, not just- I'm talking to an entity that is them, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm saying like that the touch would be missing because he's talking about that, you know, like the whole idea of metaverse is that you put a headset on and then you speak to someone and then you interact with them, right? What I'm saying is that because touch would be missing, I think that's the barrier that people won't be able to cross over.
But not necessarily. It's like you video conference someone, like, you know, you still know they're there, you're talking to them there. True. You know? So it's kind of like that. That's kind of what I'm...
Yeah. I think to get to that Black Mirror level, it'll have to hijack your touch senses as well, which is far away. We're far away from that. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. That's where I think it'll get to complete psychological, you know, like learning everything. It's all your six senses that will be completely hijacked. And I think that's where you don't want to go. So I don't know.
Give it 20 years.
20? I'd say five.
Five?
Five.
Well, look, if there's monkeys that Elon Musk is experimenting on or anything to go by, maybe not. I should have
said that.
Cut that out.
Keep it. Yeah, we don't know what, again, for all we know, Elon Musk is like a cyborg.
It's probably cyborg. Done stuff on himself.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Surely he's got stuff in his head.
If it's, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. like if it's not physical, it's probably some chemical compound that he's come up with. Limitless pills.
Just on the final topic of the day. Google has been working on something called Little Signals. So they created six concept devices that mimic everyday objects, such as the moving hands of a clock or the whistle of a kettle, for the idea of creating ambient notifications. The whole purpose of it is that it'll introduce ambient ways to notify you of digital things happening in the digital world. And the whole idea of it is to reduce anxiety of, you know, harsh, aggressive noise that happens around us every day. So they have these six devices. They refer to it as an ambient computing, which engages with the senses in more subtle and nuanced ways and adapts to the environment. One concept has an arm that clinks against the glass of a bottle of medicine, letting users know it's time to take their prescription. So I'll put the video up on the YouTube video of this podcast, but basically these are like little devices. Like think of the HomePod or something. It would have certain elements that'll notify you that there's a notification, right? Either through almost like a wind chime blowing or a puff of air coming out of something, colors changing, just ever so subtly, hands of a clock moving towards certain directions. So very minimal ways of notifying you that you've got a notification, basically.
I actually like this idea a lot. Because for my phone, over the years, I've kind of just been getting more and more subtler. So like I'm always on silent, and my notification isn't like a vibration. It's like a like it's very soft. Yeah. So it's like, because I got anxiety because I just got so much stuff that I kind of just was like, I got to fix this. And yeah, so I kind of like that idea that it's in the real world as well. Although I don't have a crystal clear picture of what you're kind of, it's like this medicine bottle tapping thing. So it's like, is it like you put it next to whatever you want it to tap on and it does it, or like?
I think it would. There's this video which I can.
To me, I don't know why, but it kind of signals to me that immediately is the future. Like we'll be at a place in 20 years where it's like, oh, remember when we used to have all those like loud notifications and all this kind of stuff, and everything now is kind of just like natural.
Calmer.
In a way, it's like going back towards, you know, like that notification where the thing kind of opened up and then the postage thing like went through. It kind of was like, oh, I kind of get the connection. Yeah. I see. But people wouldn't know what we're talking about because it's just no visuals. But
yeah.
Or maybe you can put it up, Brayden. Like, sorry.
Yeah, no, totally agree with you. I think I love the concept as well, because they're still concepts, by the way. These aren't, you can't buy these things straight out of the market. But I think the application for these would be very useful. I also think that it's just people are trying to marry the tech and real life in ways that are not taking over our lives on a day-to-day basis. And I think thoughts like these and concepts like these will be the way forward. So completely agree with you there. Can't wait to see how they implement it in the coming years.
Yeah, except the thing is, I guess you're trading in subtleness for detail, because you don't know if that's from WhatsApp or like who's, you know, it's just a thing.
Like the tapping the medicine bottle, but it's actually time for you to take the dog for a walk.
It's like,
whoops.
Take the medicine for a walk. It looks like that's just about all we have time for today. So I would like to thank you for watching and listening. And until next time, see ya.